Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, October 17th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 25, 30 minutes or so. So go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for our Tuesday show. That means a full broadcast with Sports Cheetah of WagerTalk.com. Really great segment here with Sports Cheetah today. We talked some college football, and then we dug really deep into the NBA season, which begins here tonight with the Cavs, Celtics, and also the Rockets and Warriors. Over at bangthebook.com, a few things for you to check out. My college football power ratings have been updated for week 8. Those are up over there at the website. Also, college football opening line report and NFL opening line report, taking a look at some of the numbers that came out and some of the early line moves with people grabbing numbers. So you check that out over at the website. Also, my situational betting article for the NHL and for the NBA. Now, as we talked about in this segment with Cheetah here today, situational handicapping won't be as strong of an asset for us here in the NBA this season with a few more off days incorporated into the schedule. But we've still got some spots here over the first week of the season, and we'll still find some as we go throughout the NBA calendar. But situational handicapping, something that's very good for those of you that, you know, maybe don't have the time to know the NHL and the NBA inside out. You can use the schedule to your advantage. You know, in football, obviously, there aren't as many scheduling opportunities because these teams play once a week. In the daily winter sports, though, you can pick up on some of those opportunities and take advantage of those. Don't forget about the contests going on over at bangthebook.com as well. Daily streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won. Purchase necessary to join those. You just sign up with your email address. We'll send you a daily newsletter, give you an idea of what some of the new content is over at the website. And that'll be that. Then you can play those contests, take your shot at winning some cash prizes. Finally, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio is presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you sign up over at DSI using the promo code BTB and the number 25, you'll get a $25 free bet just for signing up, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. As you know, shopping around for the best prices, one of the most important things that you can do as a handicapper. We talk about it with half points and juice and football. Obviously, with the NBA starting up here this week, you know, if you can get a 4.5 instead of a 5 or a 4.5 instead of a 4, you know, you want to do that. So you want to have as many sports books at your disposal as possible. If you don't have an account over at DSI, you should give that some consideration. I just want to throw out a little bit of a heads up to our listeners out there that this week's Hunting for Winners segment with Sports Cheetah does have a little bit of an audio issue towards the end where Cheetah was cutting out a little bit. I think one of our connections kind of weakened a little bit as the segment went along. Doesn't take away from the segment, doesn't ruin the segment at all, but I just want to let you know that it's not coming on your end, and I do apologize for any inconvenience with that. Of course, if you need clarification on anything that we were talking about, you reach out to me on Twitter at Skating Tripods, or of course you can reach out to Cheetah at Sports Cheetah on Twitter. Again, I do apologize for that. Hopefully it's a problem that we don't have going forward here with our Super Contest segment on Friday or next week's Hunting for Winners segment and the subsequent segments as we go along. I think it was just a one-off thing where we just had a little bit of an issue with the connection there. So we'll do the best that we can to fix that here for future segments. So our Tuesday edition of the show here, our Hunting for Winners segment with Sports Cheetah. We talked college football. We talked overreactions. We talked some marquee games. And we also got into some NBA stuff here with a look at some of the preseason transactions, what they mean for Cheetah, some of the teams that he's looking at here heading into the season from a season win total standpoint, and then also some general betting tips for our listeners out there. So here is that Hunting for Winners segment with Sports Cheetah. All right, I'm joined now by Sports Cheetah for this week's Hunting for Winners segment. Sports Cheetah, of course, from WagerTalk.com. Preston, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing well, man. New week, ready for the NBA tomorrow, and we're going to talk a little bit of that along with the college football.
Yeah, we're going to spend part of the show here on college football and then the other part of the show on the NBA, talk about some general betting tips, looking at some teams that you may want to keep an eye on here at the start of the season for one reason or another. But Cheetah, let's go ahead and start with college football. And, you know, it's always real interesting to look at the betting market after something like what we saw last week. We saw four top 10 teams go down. We saw Troy go down to South Alabama early in the week. We had a few other upsets along the way as well. It seems like we got some overreactions out there in the marketplace this week.
Yeah, there generally are some, you know, each week. I agree, though, to a sense that there's more this week just because of a ton of the upsets that we saw. this past weekend, because you have to include, obviously, the I think it was the Friday night slate was Syracuse over Clemson and Cal beating Washington State. And then, you know, Arizona State beat Washington. I think there was three top eight teams that lost. So having a lot of that extra stuff going into some of the games now for these teams, I know we're going to talk about a couple of them, but definitely stuff you have to consider. You know, you don't throw your numbers out. You don't do anything like that or just blindly bet against or on those teams. But you have to kind of incorporate it all into your formula while you're trying to handicap and break down these games.
All right, let's touch on one of the games where we saw an upset last week. That was FIU over Tulane, and that was a number that wound up in the 12.5, 13 range at close. Had a listener question we talked about on Monday's show, and I want to touch base on this one with you as well, because we had a listener who, in his power ratings, had FIU only a four-point dog in that game, and of course, they won the game outright and won the game comfortably as well by 13 points. So the question that he asked is, you know, what do I do with that? I mean, it's one game, but do I look at this as an affirmation of my number, or should I still adjust to the market? So I want to get your thoughts on that answer.
Yeah, I mean, I'd counter back with him and say something to the degree of, like, what was your number in Clemson-Syracuse? And are you downgrading Clemson a bunch and upgrading Syracuse because of one result? You shouldn't be. And it would be the same for FIU-Tulane as well, you know, on top of it. You know, my number was a little lower, too. It wasn't as low as four, though, so... I think that was a little drastic, but yeah, I think the week before FIU got beat down by Middle Tennessee, Charlotte the week prior, Rice, Indiana, UCF early on in the year. I mean, they've just been really, really bad. It seems just been, I've been constantly downgrading in my power ratings and my number projections. So, you know, one game, one result isn't going to, I think, dictate not only just all they've done the previous season, but where the market says a number should be. So, you know, what I tend to do, I think more often than not, is I try to, at the very least, meet somewhere in the middle. So I don't know if it ends up closing 13-ish and he has four, you know, maybe adjust your numbers on the team so that your new number would be like maybe around 9.5, 10, at least if you don't want to go the full way and, you know, adjust to the point that they're now 13, because nine points seems pretty drastic. And then you also have to figure out, and that's part of doing this and just the experience of it all, but figuring out, you know, which teams are you upgrading or downgrading to, you know, cover the barrier or make up for that gap. So it's a process, and it's just like a learning curve, really. Hopefully he bet FIU, though, and it cashed for him, and he can at least be happy there and make some adjustments and know maybe, you know, that his FIU number was just a little bit too high.
You know, I think it's a really excellent point, and that was something I wrote about when I posted my 1 through 130 power ratings on Monday in the article, is that I said, you know, one of the things that I am having trouble with here this year is when I have a number that's off, and I believe the example I used was Ohio and Bowling Green, that number closed 9.5, I had 5. As it turns out here this week, I'm low on Bowling Green again. I think I have it 8.5 or 9, and it's out there in the market at 13, and that's kind of the question I've been asking myself is, when I have a number that's off, you know, do I adjust both teams the same amount to get it closer? Do I adjust one team more than the other? That's one of the things that I've had a little bit of trouble with here this season. So what is it for you? I mean, you said maybe it's just kind of a feel thing.
Not necessarily. I mean, you'd go back and you would have to obviously analyze, like, you know, where your number was versus the close the previous week, the week before that, and see if there's a trend. Is it all of FIU's opponents, you know, that happen to be better? Or is it maybe the fact that FIU is just worse than where you have them? There's usually like a trend there. Like, say, of their last four games, three of the times your number said to bet FIU. They're all different opponents, obviously. And so maybe that's, you know, telling to the degree that your FIU number is just bad, not that four other teams' numbers are bad, if that makes sense. So you kind of just have to go back and do some homework based on other weeks and market closes and encompass the whole season to that point, and then go from there and make your adjustments.
All right, one other question from the same listener here about adjusting teams down toward the bottom of your power ratings. And one thing that we talked about on Monday's show is that there are some teams that are just really bad, and there's really not a whole lot that you can do about it. And I think that we kind of see that a little bit here this week with the UAB and Charlotte game, in that if this game was played back in week one, I would have had Charlotte roughly a 4, 4.5 point favorite over UAB. Well, now this week, UAB is up to a 7-point favorite on the road against a winless 49ers team, number up from -4. So at the bottom of your power ratings, Cheetah, I mean, do you just find that you can't get teams low enough?
Yeah, that's definitely the case. I mean, my favorite example of this last Saturday was Central Florida laying 36 points to East Carolina. And East Carolina has been getting massive numbers and spreads. It seems like a lot of their games, they played USF, they played, I think, Virginia Tech earlier on, and they haven't been able to cover these spreads. And they, like, sure enough, they lost, I think they lost by 42 to UCF, so they didn't even cover then. My number was quite a bit lower than 36, and there's a chance that and you guys know, I'm pretty sure I've mentioned I have a UCF AAC future at 25-1. So it's not like I'm down on UCF either. So it's one of those where I have to gauge, you know, I'm still just not low enough on how bad East Carolina is. And I bet East Carolina under 3.5 wins this year. So I thought I was down on East Carolina. I thought I was high on UCF, and my number was still pretty bad. So, I mean, yeah, a lot of these teams, and you're referring to Charlotte, UAB's one that's just been crushing. I mean, they covered against Coastal. They went on the road at North Texas as double-digit favorites and almost won outright. Then they beat La Tech outright as double-digit underdogs. Then they just beat Middle Tennessee State, and that was one that I bet. I had bet UAB plus 6, and they ended up winning by 2 outright. So UAB is kind of just a hot team that everyone's riding. They're 4-2. You know, this is one of their games left, probably with Rice, that gives them a chance at a bowl bid. I'm guessing it's this one, Rice, or they end with UTEP. If they can win 2 of those 3, then they're going to be in a bowl, which will be impressive as hell for them, honestly.
I tell you what, that is one of my favorite stories of the college football season here, is UAB and what they're doing after not having a program for 2 years. Kudos to Bill Clark and his staff down there. And yeah, I mean, that's a team that I've been adjusting up quite a bit here. And it's kind of funny. Actually, I have Charlotte in that team wins pool that we're in. And I'm kind of hoping that they do go for the 0-12. So at least I get something out of that.
That's true. That might could end up paying off for you well.
Well, let's look at a few other games here. And one of the things I wanted to talk about here is the concept of a letdown spot. And you can kind of see where the market is thinking on some of these games here this week. You know, of course, you've got Syracuse as a 2-touchdown dog down on the road in Miami. You've got Arizona State taking on Utah. Utah is anywhere from a 7 to a 9-point favorite out there in the market. Of course, we got some quarterback questions for Utah, some other injury concerns in that game. So that number is not all over the place right now. We see some bounce back spot type scenarios as well, where you've got some teams that just didn't play well last week. The market's sort of expecting them to look more like the team that they're supposed to here. I think when it comes to conference play in this time of the year, Chi, I mean, you really have to be looking at those situational angles even a little bit harder. Do you feel like there are some that do stand out to you here this week?
Yeah, I mean, you should be looking for them every single week. It should just be part of your system or your step-by-step whatever as you're handicapping games or setting up numbers for the following week. But when there's some upsets you're not expecting, if you're doing a lot of your pre-work, you know, before games are even concluded, which I tend to do Saturday before some games, like before Arizona State ended up upsetting Washington, you know, so that's another game where now Arizona State's going on the road at Utah team that played USC really, really well on the road with Troy Williams, their backup quarterback. This is a spot, and we've seen it been bet up now from 7 to 9 already, 9.5 at Westgate even in town. I think there's people that are going to be backing Utah just for the sake of this Arizona State coming off the upset now going on the road. I mean, that was one of the weirder box scores, just final scores probably we'll see all year. For people that don't know, Arizona State going into that game, they give up like 37 points a game. They go really quick. They're pretty good on offense. They aren't good on defense. And somehow this Washington team, I mean, they didn't score till I think 5 or 6 minute mark in the fourth quarter. It was insane. And they missed a guy. I know they missed like 2 20-yard field goals. They would have had a couple more points there in the second half, but ultimately just to hold Washington down like that, I'm very intrigued by this Utah game. So that's one I'll be following closely for sure.
There's another game on the board here that we touched on a little bit in our pick 6 segment on Monday, and I want to touch on it here with you as well from a letdown standpoint. North Texas and Florida Atlantic. Now, the opening line for this game was a little bit high. I think my number is 5. The opening number came out 6.5. But to see this thing come all the way down to 3 at places like Pinnacle and Matchbook and the Greek was very surprising to me. I mean, North Texas, basically a walk-off winner. Their quarterback, Mason Fine, got his ass kicked all game long, including on the final play. Florida Atlantic, a team that people really loved coming into the year, soured on a little bit, and they probably shouldn't have early on with Florida Atlantic dealing with all the hurricane stuff and everything like that. I'm shocked to see this number at 3. I mean, this looks like you're prototypical fade the team that had a big win last week spot against an Owls team with extra prep time. I don't get this line. I mean, is this a setup? Is this a position? What do you think?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, they're coming off of a bye on top of it all. You know, North Texas has been a team that's been, I mean, similar kind of to an extent with UAB. They've just been a covering machine. So there's, I think, a lot of early moves in the week sometimes are just hurry and bet the team that's been covering all the time. There's another one, UCF's up to 8 against Navy. They're on the road at Navy. I mean, that's just insane. UCF's laying over a touchdown on the road at Navy, but people are just betting them because they're not losing, you know, and they're betting against teams that haven't covered like BYU and Georgia Southern. And I think BYU's done a 5.5 from 7. So, I mean, people, I think early in the week sometimes are just riding or whatever on certain teams or fading certain teams over and over. This is one, I agree. My numbers, I think it should be a little higher, and I think the spot's pretty good for Florida Atlantic. And really, they were a team, and you know, I may have talked through these before, but their opener against Navy, not only did they have the hurricane stuff early in the year, kind of just in the midst of everything, but that Navy game, there was a delay. And in the fourth quarter, or there were two delays, one in earlier in the game and then one in the fourth quarter. But regardless, one earlier in the game, it was just not only is it Lane Kiffin's first game, first with the team, new philosophies, new offense, and they're playing a good Navy team. They just struggled against a good team, and then the delays were funky, and it probably threw them off some on top of it. But since then, I mean, they went on the road. They were, I think, down 3 to Wisconsin going into like late in the second quarter. They ended up only losing by 17 as 30, almost 35 point dogs at Wisconsin. They hung in there pretty good. They went on after that and played. I think I've talked about actually incorporating some of these FCS blowouts into your handicapping. Some people just throw them out. This is one, Bethune-Cookman. They beat them 45-0. I think that's very telling. It's telling that they scored when they wanted to, and they, you know, if you actually look at it, they only scored 7 in the fourth quarter. The rest of the 38 were in the first three quarters because they let off the gas a little. But they didn't give up any points to Bethune-Cookman. I mean, that's good. That's how you're probably supposed to do it. I mean, FAU is probably on the right track. And I backed them against Buffalo. I ended up pushing a +3, which in a game they were winning, you know, in the fourth quarter at one point, could have won. And then they beat Middle Tennessee State by 18. They crushed Old Dominion by 30. Now they have a bye against North Texas coming up. Yeah, I think it's Florida Atlantic or nothing, especially if you can snag a -3.
Well, that's one of those games, too. When you look at that Buffalo spot for them, I mean, obviously, for one thing, it wasn't a great spot anyway, but Buffalo's a much better team than we thought they were coming into the season. They're a team that you've had to adjust up a little bit because offensively and defensively, they've looked a lot better. So that's a game where, yeah, maybe they pushed the number, but still, I mean, Buffalo is a team that kind of has a little bit of a rising profile here this year. So, you know, again, you want to be constantly evaluating the games that these teams have already played, along with evaluating the upcoming games. So, Cheeto, let's talk about a few of these games here, a couple of really big-time games. Normally, you and I kind of dig a little bit under the radar, but I want to touch on some premium games here this week. Let's start with game 355-356. Michigan takes on Penn State. This number is 10 out there in the market, consensus number, down from the opener of 12.5. Is this a position on Michigan, or is this a position on taking a double-digit spread with a low total?
You know, this one's weird. I bet game of the year, I think it was +11 and on Michigan, and it got down to like 7, 6.5 before the season started. And I'm not really too worried about my bet. I actually like Michigan. I think it should be lower. But I will say the concern is that with O'Korn at quarterback, they're probably not as good offensively, at least. And then, you know, is Spake going to play? I'm guessing that it hasn't been made official yet and that O'Korn's just expected to be the guy. But the fact that they did open 12.5 was surprising. I thought that was like really high. My number, assuming Spate played, was a 7.5 without him. You know, I think a 9.5, 10, 10.5 range is probably fine. And so ultimately, I guess the question is, you know, how much they were. I mean, they were 9 and give up 10 in a row, and they went anyway, thankfully. But I honestly, they did beat Indiana. They owned them in that game. It should never have been to overtime. And they were the dominating team. Penn State, you know, Michigan State the week before, Michigan still almost won, and they turned it over 5 times. They only gave up 1 first down the whole second half to Michigan State. Penn State's obviously good offensively, but Michigan's the best defense they've seen now by far yet. And I still kind of like the dog at double digits, especially. And I'm not sure it's a setup at all. I think it's a play on a bad number in Michigan. You know, shouldn't really be a bigger dog than 10 in this particular game, even with O'Korn. And I'm hoping Spate plays just for my sake, because I think he's worth a few more points than O'Korn is at this point.
I do have this number a little bit higher. I've got it closer to 14 here, and that's just because I've gotten extremely high on Penn State and a little bit lower on Michigan as the season's gone along. But that being said, you know, we talk about some of these spots here in conference play where teams finally play somebody. I mean, no knock on Iowa, who's a decent team. No knock on Indiana, who's a decent team. Northwestern really hasn't lived up to expectations yet, but they're okay. But I mean, you look at Penn State's body of work so far, they're 6-0. But they haven't played anybody close to their level here. Not to say that Michigan is necessarily close to their level, since, you know, this game is somewhere between 7 and 10 as a true number, probably double digits to say the least. You probably figure about 4 points for Happy Valley at night, something like that. But, you know, like you said, now Penn State plays somebody. And not only that, they play somebodies for the next 3 weeks. They're at Ohio State the following week, at in East Lansing against Sparty on November 4th. So, I mean, this is a precarious spot for anybody that wants to back Penn State here, because we haven't seen them really play a team that's on their level in a long time.
Yeah, they haven't. And I think even the three games they played someone that was, I think, you would at least call a bowl team, pretty good. Not Akron, not Georgia State. Pittsburgh, they actually got outplayed in the majority of that game. They got outgained. Pittsburgh ran way more plays. It was just a couple turnovers that really swung that game. Iowa, on the flip side, they had to win at the buzzer on the very last play, but they outplayed Iowa. I think, you know, they outgained them. It was like by 300 yards or something, and one of those where they had way more plays too. I think they ran 99 plays or something, just because Iowa's defense was so bad. But, you know, Penn State just couldn't ultimately ever pull away. And then Northwestern's another one now where that one, a pretty good team on the road, that it looks like they won pretty handily, like Pittsburgh. They won by 24. That game in the first quarter alone, or at least the first half, Northwestern was inside the Penn State red zone three times and got 0 points total. And so at halftime, it was only 7-0, I think. It was 14-0. And then I think the second half spread was 7. I'm looking now. Nope, it was 10-0. All right. So it was 10-0. Penn State ended up going on to win 31-7. But Northwestern played that game a lot closer. It's one of those, you look at the yards, the first downs, and is just a couple turnovers in the red zone. And then I think they went for it on a fourth down on top of it. And then they had another drive, I remember, around the 30 that they took a big sack and just had a short punt from like the 42. It was a closer game than that final score. So it's a really, really intriguing game to me, because they're playing, I think, by far the best team they've seen yet, by far the best defense they've seen. I think Michigan's still the best defense in the country as far as the yards per play goes. And I'm not sure Penn State's really played anyone that good. I mean, when you look at it, Northwestern and Pitt and Iowa are all kind of having down years, Pitt especially. Iowa and Northwestern, I mean, I guess time will tell, but I know a lot of people had high hopes for Northwestern, and they haven't really met those either. I just am very curious to see if Penn State's for real, and they really are going to be competing for not only the division, Big 12 title, but the national championship, then they're going to have to show it here before they go on the road to play Ohio State. It's going to be, like you mentioned, a tough little three-week stretch here for them.
All right, let's slide on down to game 385-386 here. Arizona takes on Cal, and Cal opened a 1.5-point favorite here. Seems like that was a little bit overreactionary to the win over Washington State last week. Market has corrected that. Arizona now 2.5, 3-point favorite, and kind of interesting the way that this game sort of parallels a little bit what happened with the line movement in Arizona's game last week when they took on UCLA. That was one that kind of opened in that pick'em range, and then, you know, you look up at the board and all of a sudden Arizona's, you know, favored in that game. And I think that this is a really, really challenging handicap, because for Cal it was a unique situation, the wildfires, the air quality, all that type of thing. You know, now they take on this Arizona upstart that, you know, I don't think people had that high of hopes for Arizona coming into the season, and now all of a sudden they're a road favorite against a Cal team that's been much better than expected. Something smells off about this line.
Yeah, you know, the line's a little high now. I'll toot my Twitter handle / my own horn here a little bit, but I've been high on Cal all year. I think I'd even talked about Justin Wilcox, the effect he was going to have defensively on this team coming from Wisconsin. We had them, you know, on the money line plus the points against UNC, who they beat. Then they obviously just beat Washington State as huge dogs. I bet plus 15, thinking that it was too high. My number was 10, and I bet plus 639 on the money line, and I even tweeted it out just in case anyone grabbed it right before kickoff. I didn't understand that line at all. And Washington State, I mean, they're good, but they are what they are. They kind of – they were being overvalued. They just were. And it's one of those where it wasn't like something crazy where, I mean, like even like FIU, and we're talking about that example of, you know, how do you adjust numbers, this and that, when there's a result of a game where it looks like there was one clear side, even like 10 times more so than the FIU game. I think FIU only ended up winning by two or something. Or maybe it was a little bit more of a bigger win than that. But Cal absolutely just manhandled Washington State. I think they kept them out of the end zone entirely. They gave up 3 points, scored 30 something themselves. They're a really good team playing with swagger, with a coach that's just, I think him and Scott Frost and probably Jeff Brohm over at Purdue were like the three candidates in my own head, like for coach of the year. They've just been an awesome, awesome team to watch. And I think they've been undervalued all year. And I think even a little bit now they're being undervalued because Arizona ran up against one of the worst rush defenses in the country last week and beat, you know, UCLA. Colorado isn't very good. They almost lost, they just almost lost Oregon State, a team that's just in absolute disarray, program in disarray. Gary Anderson decides to leave. One of the weirder things that I've seen, Oregon State's probably going to go winless now, and Colorado needed to score at the buzzer to beat them. Arizona beat UTEP. They lost to Houston, a Houston team that's pretty down, and just lost to a pretty down Tulsa team by 30. I'm just not sure what Arizona's really done. So I'm shocked to see it move this way, especially after Arizona got bet against in a matchup that you actually would have thought, oh, UCLA, they're not going to be able to stop the run. That's all Arizona can do. So as you can see, I'm like a little confused myself, and I love Cal, and I'm just not sure we can really buy into Arizona. And so now you're trying to, I guess, you know, culminate everything together. Well, but Cal's coming off a huge win over Washington State. But at some point, they went into that knowing they could win the game. They almost did against USC, actually, earlier in the year. I'm pretty sure that this Cal team's like just fine playing whoever they want. They're fine being an underdog role. They're at home and coming off of a big win. Really didn't seem like a big win when they end up winning by 31 points or whatever it was. And it wasn't like it was a dramatic, emotional, crazy finish, right? I mean, they were just dominating from start to finish. And it's like, all right, well, business as usual. Let's move on. We have Arizona on deck. They're going to stop the Arizona run. Arizona's not going to score 45, 47 like they have the last 2 weeks. They played a similar defense, I think, comparable defense in Utah, and only scored 24 at home against Utah. That's probably a similar amount we'll see here. And, you know, at three, I think it is a little bit of a reaction. My number is pick exactly. So when it opened Cal minus 1.5, I was like, okay, that's fine. I understand why. To see it bet all the way to the other side now to three, I mean, I'm intrigued to see. Maybe I'll take a little plus three. If I got a hook too, then I think especially would consider jumping in and backing the Bears, even off the big win over Washington State.
Yeah, I got this one, Cal minus one, and I have adjusted both teams up. And with Khalil Tate at quarterback for Arizona, they're certainly a much better team than they were earlier on in the year. But this Cal team, like you said, I mean, they just kind of keep, you know, developing confidence with each passing game. And it's funny too, because we talked about Cal on last week's show in that game against Washington State, in that, you know, they played really well in the non-conference. They beat an SEC team in Ole Miss. I mean, Ole Miss is a marginal SEC team this year, but still, they made good second-half adjustments, won that game, played right with USC the following week, and it felt like everyone just decided to sell that team when they got blown out by Oregon and Washington, and, you know, it was a buy sign on Cal. And then, you know, you get that buy sign last week, the market goes against them, which you and I couldn't figure out, and the spot was really bad for Washington State, too. And then here they are again getting faded this week. I mean, is it – I don't want to say is it possible that we're smarter than everybody, because, you know, I mean, that sounds kind of pretentious. But you know, this is just one of those examples where it could just work out that the market's not always right.
Yeah, and it's extremely strange because Arizona got bet against it, and I thought was a great matchup for them against UCLA. So I don't know. I think there's people that just went in and faded these teams off of the big wins, because you saw Arizona State, you know, against Utah open 7 up to 9. And then the other one, which I am forgetting off the top of my head, the Syracuse line, I'd have to look, but I'm pretty sure at one point that got under 14 and now it's 14.5, 15. I think someone just went in there and said, I'm going to fade all three of those teams and maybe go 2-1 or 3-0. And know, maybe it works out for him. But when it comes down to it, I'm not sure why, you know, Cal's in a really bad spot here. I don't think they are. And so I like him. And when it comes down to it, on top of the fact that they're just really well coached now, they're obviously they're forcing a lot of turnovers. They're also, Bowers himself does turn it over a lot. So they've had kind of some swingy games just from turnover variant stuff. But the second half adjustments that Wilcox makes, it's still a thing I think I've mentioned here on your show before. Second half unders for Cal every week but one are cashing, and it cashed again against Washington State. And it's mostly because it's the opponent of Cal who just can't score in the second half. So on top of the game prep that they're doing weekly before the games kick off, whatever they're doing at halftime, it's just like, it's telling. And I'd have to go back now and look, and I'm curious, like Wisconsin last year in second half unders, or their team opponents like unders, or was Wisconsin pulling away in second halves a lot? Because this is like, it's becoming like a thing, not just like that's worth betting every week, but is like coach of the year status stuff. Like, how is it that the opposition is scoring 0 and 3 points in the second half against Cal every week almost? And the only teams that scored more were Oregon and USC. And that was thanks to 5 or 6 turnovers in each of those games from Cal. Like I said, really kind of struggled taking care of the ball sometimes offensively themselves. So I love the team, and I hope they keep winning. I hope they get to a bowl game. And this is one, you know, if you want, it's basically you're playing against a situational guy, you trust in the number and you take the 3 points, or you wait and take money line, you know, +130, 140 or something. And, you know, I think numbers wise, that is a good edge and it is worth betting.
Another team here that's, you know, almost blindly gotten bet against this week is LSU. That was a number that was 7, and now most of the market's down to 6.5 on that game, taking Ole Miss. And it's hard to back Ole Miss in a lot of contexts this year. I mean, I know they just hung a huge number on Vanderbilt. I think it was 58. But still, that looks like another one of those moves where you've got almost a blind fade of LSU coming off that Auburn win. And, you know, I mean, that's one that probably does make a little bit more sense than the Arizona-Cal one as an example.
Yeah, you definitely have to contemplate, I guess, everything. I just want you asked the Arizona-Cal one, and I started getting way into it. But there's other ones. I mean, even like Syracuse and Miami. Miami's coming off a game that they had a scare, almost lost to Georgia Tech, and what ended up being a pretty flat spot for them off their big Florida State win. Now you have a Syracuse team. And this is what's great about, I think, adjustments and just understanding, you know, where teams are at, how well they're coached. You know, Babers did a fantastic job, by the way, in that Clemson game. He managed the fourth quarter brilliantly, just every little thing possible. Every little second they slow the clock down. It's a team typically goes really, really fast. I mean, they just executed to perfection. And so, I mean, they're legit in that sense. They're really well coached. Executing is one thing. Are you able to execute now off that big win against Miami on the road? I'm very intrigued. If they cover this number on top of it after like a big win over Clemson like they had, they played LSU really well on the road too a couple weeks back. I mean, maybe Syracuse is just for real. And at some point, maybe Cal might be in the same boat. Maybe Arizona State, you know, we'll see. But eventually you just kind of have to make adjustments that are like, well, these teams are playing really well in bad spots, end up sitting top 8 teams every other week. You just gotta respect the results and then make adjustments accordingly going on.
One more game to touch on here for college football, and then we'll talk a little bit of the association here. Notre Dame's a 3.5-point favorite at a lot of shops. Bovada's 4. The Chris books are up to 4. DSI at 4 as well, as USC makes the trip out to South Bend. And this is a really tough handicap for me because you got this Notre Dame team that has played well at times this season. You know, they haven't played the most difficult of schedules, lost to Georgia at home, blew out Michigan State on the road, but that was a misleading box score game. And then you've got this USC team that, you know, people loved this team to win a national championship. People loved Sam Darnold. Well, when you look at the game-by-game body of work for USC here, it hasn't been all that impressive. Now, Texas is a little bit better than people thought, maybe. We just talked about how Cal is better. Washington State has been a top 15 team in everybody's power ratings, and that was a close loss on the road. There's a lot going on with this game. I mean, it's two premier teams, premier time slot, national TV. I don't know what to make of this number, though. I mean, to me, it looks high based on my power ratings and based on, you know, the assumptions I had for these two teams coming into the year. But still, I mean, you have to look at USC and kind of wonder, you know, is this team as good as we thought they were?
It's really strange, and I agree 100% here with this angle. their schedule's been really, really tough. When it comes down to it, their easiest game was Oregon State, and they did handle them. They won 38-10. That was coming off the Washington State loss, which the loss, by the way, was by three on the road in a game that three of their starting offensive linemen got injured for the game by the second quarter. And after that, they only scored, I think it was 10 more points. And so that really backed them up in that game. And Darnold had his like career low in passing yards. So you kind of have to, I'm not giving them a pass, but I mean, against Utah, I think it's evident that they're just not healthy on the offensive line because their offense just isn't as electric as even it was last year. But then you're even looking back a little bit, it's not even as electric as it was against Stanford, who's maybe the best team they've played yet. And they beat them by 18 at home and put up 600 plus yards. And I mean, they look great then. And that was just earlier in the year when they were healthier. So, every team they've played outside of Oregon State, you could say is going to go to a bowl game. And that includes Cal now. Texas for sure should get there. Western Michigan's going to get there, who's been, you know, somewhat better than people figured when they were coming in after losing Fleck and to Minnesota and just a bunch of personnel. And so, this is one where you're like, well, USC seems to be struggling every week. They only beat Cal by 10 on the road. They only beat Utah by one and almost lost because of the two-point conversion that Kyle Whittingham decided to go for. And it was a backup quarterback for Utah. So, like, what's wrong with USC? And on the flip side, Notre Dame's like, they've just chucked UNC, Miami, Ohio, Michigan State, like you said. The Boston College game was closer than that final, kind of like the Michigan State one was. Chuck Temple, like they were supposed to. But the one that really gets me is, and I was on Georgia, and I bet a money line and plus points. But Notre Dame only losing to Georgia now by one. I'm not sure. I don't look at polls. But is Georgia number two now in the country? I mean, they might be. That's an impressive loss now in its own way. When at the time Notre Dame was a favorite, if you ran that back this week, you know, Notre Dame's not a favorite to Georgia. So I have to give them credit, even though they have a loss. And even USC's loss, you know, these are Georgia and Washington State, like you mentioned, at least top 15 teams. So it's a very intriguing matchup, one that I think the number is too high. But it ultimately comes down to if you trust USC's offense and ability to just score and, you know, use the talent they have in Darnold, which they haven't been able to do very well. And you go to, like, you know, the Don Best screen, and you look at, like, injury reports and stuff, and they're going to have, like, a nice list for USC, a lot of guys that are questionable. And you won't know really who's playing until, you know, the morning of the game. Maybe Friday they announce some guys. But it's one that if everyone's healthy or they're at least seemingly intact, that I'll be looking at playing, you know, the plus fours that are out there, just because it is too high. And this should probably be more like, you know, pick one, maybe Notre Dame minus one, if everyone's healthy on the Trojan side.
Well, that's what the hard part is. I mean, they're coming off of playing a game against Utah. We all know what it's like to play against Utah and Kyle Whittingham's teams. I mean, they play physical. They will go mano a mano on the line. They're going to beat you up. They're going to try and, you know, hit you as hard as they possibly can. So for USC already with a long injury report, now going out to South Bend against the Notre Dame team off of a bye, I think that's where you kind of start to get, you know, what's going on with this number. I mean, I think my number and my power ratings here, I got USC, I believe, minus one in this game. But when you start talking about it from a spot standpoint, with USC having a long travel, coming off the Utah game, Notre Dame off the bye, maybe at that point you kind of get yourself around a Notre Dame minus two, something like that. But there are fours out there, and there are four flats out there. And I mean, when you talk about betting around key numbers there, you know, there is some line value on USC, it looks like. It's just a matter of, you know, being able to go out there and play it, because I think that, you know, there are reasonable concerns on the USC side.
You might be able to tell me, because against North Carolina, Wimbush didn't play, if I recall. It was another quarterback for Notre Dame. I didn't bet the game. I imagine Wimbush is healthy now and ready to go. Do you have an update on that?
Ian Book, who's doesn't have the greatest college football name, was the guy that went for Notre Dame in that North Carolina game, 17 of 31, a touchdown and a couple of picks. I haven't seen anything about Wimbush, actually. I'm trying to look now as we're talking here. I imagine that he will be able to go here. I mean, with the week off, I think there was a chance that he was going to try to go in that North Carolina game, but they erred on the side of caution as well. They should have. So it looks like he's going to be able to go here this week. And I mean, you know, that's another thing. He's able to go, but we don't really know how healthy he is. I mean, we didn't see him in game conditions last week.
Right. I was just looking at the schedule, and I remembered that he didn't even play. And so now you had a bye week there. So sure, maybe he's rested. Maybe he's healthier. But he's not 100%, and he hasn't played, you know, in a real game. And what it'll end up being like 21 days or something. So, I'm intrigued by the Trojan side for sure, especially if he can grab a four.
All right, well, let's switch over to the NBA here, talk a little bit about that as the season tips off on Tuesday night here, which will be later in the day for those that are listening. Of course, we record this on Monday evenings with Cheetah. You got two games coming up on Tuesday, Cavs-Celtics, Rockets-Warriors, plenty of storylines with both of those games, and obviously some bad blood there between the Cavs and the Celtics with Kyrie's comments and the Kevin Love injury in the playoffs a couple years ago, and of course, these are the two best teams here in the Eastern Conference. So, Cheetah, as we head into another season of the NBA, let's start with some generalities here. What are some of the more basic betting tips that you've got for our listeners?
Yeah, let's. We can start with that. I think, in similar to like football, and people probably know by now that I'm very like numbers based, and I'll give people, I guess, a heads up on where my NBA stuff comes from. And you know, generally, I would say 4 or 5 years ago, I was basically just betting power ratings and like situational spots. But more and more so, and maybe less so this year, we can get to the scheduling changes this year in a bit. But there were guys that were just getting rested out of the blue, and they weren't always the same guys, you know, whether it was the Cavs or the Spurs, really Popovich was the first one to start doing it, Warriors at times, and just other teams resting guys here and there. Like Cousins would be out, you know, every once in a while. It seemed like, you know, every 2 or 3 games he was just resting a game. There was a lot of kind of guessing in NBA lines based on, well, how much is that player really worth? Well, I wanted to figure out how much every player was worth, literally. So what I do for NBA before the year, I actually go through and I evaluate every single player and give every single player a rating. And then I use that rating to dictate my team rating. And then I base it on, I have like a team rating for 8-man, 9-man, 10-man, 11-man, 12-man rotations. And you know, the closest one I'll probably use for like a general like power rating system to create lines would be like the 9-man rotation, or maybe a 10-man, or maybe like a 9.5 and average the two. Just because most of the time you're not going to your 11th and 12th guys unless the game's out of hand by then, anyways. So I have team ratings that I have and I use to handicap and it's, you know, set my own numbers and projections, but they're all based on actual player ratings where I go through and tell you my rating for every single player in the NBA. And so it's really helpful when there are guys resting and you're trying to figure out, okay, well, if I bet this game last night, well, you know, where am I at this point? Should I middle back? Should I do this? Is there value here? Or should I bet a team? Maybe you didn't bet it the night before or the morning of, and now you're wondering, well, should I bet, you know, the Cavs, even though LeBron's out because it's moved 4 or 5 points. I can actually, like, you know, actually dictate, or I guess I should say quantify how much that player's worth. So I'm actually, you know, I'm pretty proud of that stuff that I have and the things that I've done here prepping for the season. And so I would say before anything, and you're trying to, I guess, do betting tips for NBA, I would just say at least have an idea of where numbers should be. You're not going to be able to do, like, complete player evals like I've done, but at least have like a team rating and a basis of, okay, well, if so-and-so's sitting here, this and that. I think a lot of people get caught up in, oh, LeBron's out, hurry and bet against them. And then there's the people that caught up in, oh, well, it's an overreaction, you have to bet on LeBron-less Cavs. And I'm pretty sure the Cavs without LeBron have like a horrifying ATS record. So it's like a something like 4-14 out of 18 games or something. I mean, they don't adjust them enough, let's just put it that way. So that you have to know what the spots are and this and that. And you're never going to really be able to go and take that next step until you have at least like a team-based rating that you're making projections off of. So I would say, as usual with any sport, look for situational stuff, look for flat spots, letdowns. But really, I think just like similar to baseball, where guys that are modeling baseball, you have so-and-so pitcher scratched, or so-and-so hitter Corey Seager's out for the NLCS. Like, how many cents in a line is Corey Seager worth in every game? And you should be able to just know that if you're modeling baseball, right? So similar with NBA, you need to know how many points certain players are worth when it comes to the lines. And so it's a little more, I guess, tedious, because football, there's so many more players that each position outside of like quarterback is affecting the game a lot lesser scale than the NBA would, and let alone an NBA star player like a LeBron or Kawhi Leonard sat for the Spurs with Tony Parker and, you know, Pau Gasol or something. So there's a lot of to kind of take in, but I would say the base stuff is not to jump to conclusions. Have a set of power numbers to some degree you're using to make your numbers, and then really take into account and follow and spend time each day figuring out who's in and out of lineups, which has been especially just dominant in the NBA, which, like I said, we'll talk about it later, may change a little bit this year that they are starting the NBA season earlier, so they do less four and fives, four games in five nights, less back-to-backs, which should at least help those teams that are trying to save the energy for the playoffs, you know, not just suddenly and randomly rest a bunch of stars. And it's been kind of costing the NBA, I think, money probably for one, but just publicity as far as their network game when it's Cavs Spurs and no one that anyone cares about is playing. So I think that's going to be beneficial for some of the good teams. They're probably going to be resting guys less often, but you need to at least be following and tracking everything, just because I know a lot of, and even for me back in the day, I would just kind of bet a game because the number said this, and maybe it was a pretty good spot because, you know, it's the fifth game in seven nights and the Warriors are on a road trip in Boston, and Boston usually plays the Warriors pretty close, but you really have to, I think, and I've learned, especially in NBA and in baseball, you know, be able to value what a player is at worth and what they're really bringing to a team. And I can't just like give away, I guess, everything that I do to assess those numbers. But I think for people can still do a good job just being conscious of it and following and putting the work in each day of seeing, you know, who's resting, who's out, who's in, and it'll go a long way.
I want to get back to this individual player grades thing in a second, because we've got some good examples of it on Tuesday. But I do want to ask you this from a general point of view. What are some stats that you would suggest using when it comes to helping our listeners out with their handicapping?
You know, you'd be surprised how many questions I get, not even questions, people assuming or saying things like even in football, but it goes for NBA too. Like someone will say, oh, here it is. It was like, this wasn't on Twitter, but I was getting an argument on Facebook. Have you ever heard of that before? An argument on Facebook with a friend about the Lakers. And he was referring to their defensive numbers at some point last season. And they were just like completely wrong, and I was so confused as to why. And I was used to just talking on Twitter or just the people that when they refer to a team being ranked like 15th in defense, they're not referring to like points per game. And this guy was using points per game, and I was like, you realize the Lakers are like the second fastest team in the NBA. They're going really up-tempo. So, yes, they're going to give up a lot more points per game. They're also going to score more. But I was like, defensive, I just had to explain to him like what defensive efficiency is, like how many points you're giving up per possession is a better predictor than anything, not, you know, points per game or yards per game in an NFL or college football. You should be doing yards per play, and that actually really breaks it down. So if anyone's using points per game as an actual indicator or projection indicator, don't. Make sure you're using points per possession. Make sure you're incorporating pace or how many possessions teams are actually running on average each game. And you know, that'll help with totals if you're doing totals quite a bit. I would also say there are stats that tend to, like, for example, turnovers in football are more or less random, not completely. Some teams obviously are better. Like in Alabama is going to turn you over more than they turn it over. But you know, when you're plus 20 in turnovers over the course of a season or fumble luck, you know, which is essentially supposed to be a 50-50 proposition when you fumble the football, recovering it's supposed to be 50-50. You know, sometimes teams will have like a minus 12 fumble recovery season, and then that usually regresses. One thing that people have caught on to is that opponent three-point percentage is a very statistic. So you'll have teams that maybe, opponents against these teams shot like low 30% range from three for an entire season when the league average is more like 36 something. And if that regresses the following year, then they're going to be giving up, you know, 37, 38, 39% three-point shooting, which is going to be bad. Now, you don't want to, you know, bank on that either. And there could be reasons and scheming and actual technicalities as to why opponents were shooting lower. And you need to dig into those. But that's another stat that when you're doing win totals, I know this is going to go up before the two games kick off Tuesday, but a lot of the win totals will still be up through Wednesday before more of the games go. But when you're doing season win totals, that's one where over the course of a season, you could probably say, okay, this is going to regress. It's another, you know, angle that I can use to like this team's under or over on the flip side. If teams randomly shot 39% against, there was a team, I can't remember last year, whose opponents shot 39% from three, and it was, I think, pretty random. And so maybe that regresses some. And so there's a few stats there. Make sure you're using, you know, better predictors for actual projections for totals and points scored, points allowed. But if you're doing season win totals here the next day or two before things get rolling. Look at opponent three-point percentage and see if there's any kind of skewed outliers there that you can incorporate into your projections going into the season.
All right, so let's talk about this individual player grades thing, because I want to talk a little bit about some teams that you like and some teams that you maybe don't like here coming into the season based on the off-season transactions. And I don't know how you feel about the Houston Rockets, but this is the example I'm going to use because they play here on Tuesday night. So the Rockets pick up Chris Paul, who is a phenomenal basketball player. There's no doubt about that. One of the concerns that people had with Golden State when they picked up Kevin Durant is, you know, everyone said, well, there's only one ball to go around. When it comes to Houston, we know that James Harden wants to be a high-usage player. He's been a very high-usage player. He's a good fit in the Mike D'Antoni system. So you've got Chris Paul coming over now. So how did you rate Chris Paul with the Rockets relative to how you rated Chris Paul with the Clippers?
All right, this is good timing because last night I went on a rant recording. So I'm doing team previews at Podcast U for every team. If I have a season win total or a future prop bet that I make, I talk it through. And I didn't end up betting the Rockets for anything, but I sat there like kind of mocking everyone. I was like, oh, there's not enough balls to go around, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, stuff. Like sometimes it just doesn't make sense to say that. And I'm pretty sure that last year a Kevin Durant guy who was fine sharing a basketball with Westbrook his whole career for one, but was going into a system and playing with guys like Draymond Green and Klay Thompson who really, and Steph Curry, who really don't care and don't need the ball. They're not Kobe Bryant. And or even James Harden to an extent. So people saying that wasn't going to work was just insane, especially going into that system. The fact that he even went there I thought was telling. Like, he's never going there if he doesn't ever think that he's not going to fit in. And it was just as easy and smoothly as you could possibly imagine. It went as smoothly as you could possibly imagine. Now here, I think it's going to be very similar. I don't know, understand why people think, like, all of a sudden having Chris Paul, who's been, like, perennially, like, every year, I think, for a few years in a row now, has been a top three plus-minus guy. Like, you go – a few years ago, Steph and him were top two by far, and then it was, like, Harden and LeBron. Last year, I'm pretty sure he was actually number one. You look at the real plus-minus every single year, Chris Paul's right up there. The Clippers, part of it, you know, not only that Chris Paul's just really good at basketball, but the other part is that the Clippers bench was pretty bad for a few seasons. And so when he'd go off the court, they were so bad. And he'd come back on the court and they were fine again. So his actual, like, on-court, off-court numbers were just insane splits. It was similar to Steph Curry before they added guys like Iguodala and Kevin Durant. But you're adding a guy like that who literally there's like two guys better than Harden last year, and one of them is going now to team up with him. And you just can't add a guy of that caliber, especially in a system like D'Antoni's, which is very ball, share the ball friendly. I know there's guys that need the ball a lot. But I mean, it just isn't going to not work all of a sudden, and especially when you just surround those guys with shooters like they have. And they upgraded. I mean, we can talk about the Rockets a little bit now, but they've always had Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson and Ariza, some shooters. And Ariza's been really their only, like, 3-and-D guy they've had. And they've struggled because if they had Capella down low as a center, up-and-coming young center is great. But they haven't had really anyone else. Like, playing Ryan Anderson's a liability. Eric Gordon's not great. Harden's not great. Adding Chris Paul defensively as a point guard is fantastic. They also snagged P.J. Tucker, who was on the Suns for a while, went to the Raptors. He's now on the Rockets. Very, very underrated guy. I was talking about on my podcast thing last night because I was doing some – I go in alphabetical order. And I was talking about the Mavericks and how their highest-rated player is Harrison Barnes. And I was just talking about guys and then Noel, Nowitzki, Matthews. They just have a really bad roster, but Rick Carlisle gets a ton out of them. And he's one of the more underrated coaches still, I think, today. But you look at Houston's, right? And they're like seventh man as P.J. Tucker in player evaluations. And he would be like the third best player in the Mavericks and not even that far off from, you know, Barnes and Nowitzki and Wes Matthews. They are very, very deep. And they added even in the Clippers trade, they got Luke Bamute, who's a very versatile defender. Actually shoots the ball pretty well when he's wide open, which he will be in Houston. I mean, they did two things. One, like I'm getting at here, they added a lot of the 3-and-D length that would defend a Warriors team pretty well. If you need to switch off of Clay, Iguodala, and Kevin Durant and just switch everything and play defense that way, well, now you can do it if you're playing Ariza, P.J. Tucker, and Luke Bamute all at the same time. And then you have Chris Paul on guard. You can go small, you can go big with Clint Capella at center, you can go smaller, Ryan Anderson at center, and really spacing on offense. They just have so many options now. But they did one other thing. I talked about how certain players are so good when they're on the court versus off because they're just such a big factor. Last year, Patrick Beverley was hurt for the majority of the first half of the season, and he missed a ton of games. So when Harden was off the court, they didn't have another point guard. And the guy running point was actually Eric Gordon, which is really strange because he's just a spot-up shooter, can kind of drive occasionally, kind of finish. As soon as they traded for Lou Williams, it made a pretty big difference for the Rockets. They traded for him. They gave up a pick for him from the Lakers. And even though Lou Williams is more of a scoring guard, he at least just handles the ball really well and can run an offense, and he scores within it, but he also can pass. But even between those two, there's still a gap where there was the 10 minutes Harden wasn't playing. You know, the Rockets struggled, even with Williams, but it was worse before him. And then Beverly came back too, but he was usually playing with Harden. My point is this. Now, at all times, just think of it this way. The three most valuable players last year in Real Plus Minus, right? Two of the top three were Harden and Chris Paul. At all times this season, in a Mike D'Antoni offense, the Houston Rockets will have either Chris Paul or Harden, one of those two guys, two of the best three last year in Real Plus Minus, running the offense. At no time, assuming they're smart enough to do this, will they not have one of those guys running their offense. It's just insane to me, and I think Chris Paul's going to love playing for D'Antoni when it's all said and done. So that's my longer-than-you-expected answer about the Rockets. I didn't bet like a season win total because our number's pretty spot on. Last year was the time, I think, to jump in on them. We bet the over when it was 10 games less. Now it's pretty good, around 55 with the West that's just pretty stacked. But it's a team that I do not think is going to just – all of a sudden fall on their face because they're adding a guy like Chris Paul. I mean, they've made a couple other moves too, and they're going to be a contender, I think. It's them or OKC for me battling out Golden State in Western Conference Finals.
All right. So what about some other teams here that you're looking to back maybe early on in the season, or some teams that you're looking to back from a win total standpoint based on what they did over the offseason? I mean, like I said, there was a lot of player movement, a lot of personnel changes in free agency and in the trade market. So who are some teams you think have a little bit of upside here as we head into the year?
Sure. I think one that is still undervalued, at least from a season win totals perspective, is the Denver Nuggets. And their season win total, I found a 43.5 still that I bet over. I have a real plus minus model projection that is 47.2 wins. So about four games above where the number was. I know it varies. There's 44.5s out there for the Nuggets. It's still too low. So I bet Denver over. But they're one where I actually was going through and doing all my player evaluations, like I said, and then basically set up a team rating and power rating from those. And they're one, I mean, if I go through my actual like power ratings, like top teams, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and they're the eighth best team in the NBA for me, which I think a lot of people would be shocked to hear that Denver's number eight. And they're right there. They're tied with like Minnesota, honestly. And then it's the teams that you would expect as, you know, the other six: Boston, Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Houston, Cleveland, and Golden State. So if you're getting rid of those, I think six that everyone would say, who are the next best teams? It's Minnesota, Denver, and Milwaukee. And then the Clippers are kind of a little bit distant tier off of them. But a lot of people just don't expect Denver. And so I'm guessing we're going to get some value early. It's just, I don't know yet. It all obviously depends on the numbers. But based on the season win total being a few games low, I think we're going to get value on Denver. Not only are they just a year older, Mike Malone, also one of the more underrated coaches, I think, in the NBA. But you have guys like now Nikola Jokic is going to be the center and piece that he wasn't even the main guy all last year. They were starting Nurkic and him together. They weren't sure. Maybe they bring Jokic off the bench. Nurkic, they didn't know. They ended up trading Nurkic away to the Portland Trail Blazers. They have Gary Harris is a year old. Jamal Murray now is going to be he's a sophomore. He was a rookie last year that was good and maybe stealing the point guard, starting point guard spot from Emmanuel Mudiay. They just have so many pieces. Even like a guy they got from Utah, Trey Lyles, has been on Utah as like a young guy. I think still only like 21 or 22 years old. He's their 12th. Like if I said I do 12-man, 11-man, 10-man rotation ratings, he's their 12th man. That's not a bad 12th man. They just have so much depth. Will Barton, Kenneth Faried still on the team. Wilson Chandler, really good. But they have the one guy, the key guy, the piece that he's always a top 20 metric guy, real plus minus, net rating, offensive, defensive, Paul Millsap. That was a great snag for them. It's kind of a more veteranish type guy to go with this core of youth. Outside of, you could say Kenneth Faried and Wilson Chandler are a little older, but those aren't guys that are really changing a game in every aspect like Millsap does. So picking up him, I think Denver's a team that's going to be overlooked, at least it seems, early on. And, you know, nothing really futures-wise you can do with them since they're not really at the level of Golden State or Oklahoma City or Houston or San Antonio. But they're probably going to make the playoffs. I know it was minus 210, someone told me, on a certain offshore earlier today, which I think my actual projection for them to make the playoffs is like 73%. So anything, you know, $2 or less to make the playoffs would have an edge. So you can look for that. But outside of that, it's just over on their season wins for the Nuggets.
So I know that one of the things that you can do in the NBA here is, you know, maybe look at some of the teams that have lost quite a bit. I mean, I think of the Utah Jazz, who actually opened with Denver on Wednesday, not having Gordon Hayward, but this is still a team that plays very, very good defense. I'm sure there are some other teams out there that may be a little bit of undervalued commodities because of some players that they lost. So, you know, I know it's hard for you to speculate because the spreads themselves actually mean so much, but are there any other teams, maybe some teams that probably won't make the playoffs that could have some game-by-game value early on?
Yeah, you know, and the Jazz definitely could make the playoffs, and they could have some value early on. You know, I think an underrated guy still, and I'm really intrigued by the Jazz, so that's a good one to bring up and talk about because my numbers actually, let me pull up the tab again. I think I have like 44 wins for them, and their total is only 39.5 to 40.5. So that's another one where I actually like over on the Jazz. Hayward's such a good piece. And, you know, you have to give him, like, all the credit in the world for what he's done in Utah. And they've just kind of been this young build with Gobert and even, you know, guys like Favors and Exum, who never really panned out but were these big pieces. But they've just had other guys now that have made such a big difference, whether it be like Rodney Hood or Joe Ingles, Alec Burks, who's been injured a lot. But they made a really good snag, I thought, in a couple spots. Not only did they just draft Donovan Mitchell, who might win Rookie of the Year, by the way, 18-1, probably not a bad bet. They grabbed guys like Thabo Sefolosha this year, who can just play really good defense and, you know, help out in the length issue that maybe you lose from Hayward or versatility issue where a guy can guard a shooting guard or a small forward. Last year they signed Joe Johnson, who ended up being just a great piece to have for the team and basically is the reason they beat the Clippers in that series. But then they also just they got Ricky Rubio from the T-Wolves, and he's a guy that he doesn't shoot very well, but he has been shooting better from three. But he doesn't take a lot of bad shots either. He either shoots if he's open or he's passing and getting everyone else involved. But it's crazy. I saw a chart at one point last year. I'd have to go back to find it in my Twitter feed because I retweeted it at one point. But it was his teammates, like shooting percentages, net ratings on offense and defense, when Rubio's on the court and versus when he's off. And it was just night and day how much value Rubio adds to all of his other teammates when he's on the floor. And I think we're going to see something similar here with Utah at point guard. You know, they were going George Hill, you know, like he's not even much of a point guard when it comes down to it. They have an actual point guard that's going to be distributing. And I think getting the most out of a lot of these young Utah Jazz players and some of the veteran kind of pieces they've been adding around them. So I like the Jazz quite a bit. They're one that maybe are going to be undervalued in the market early, but it's probably going to be, you know, a coin flip more or less to make the playoffs just because the West is so stacked.
All right, what about the flip side here? I mean, there are some teams that are obviously looking ahead to future seasons, looking ahead to the draft. I mean, look at a team like the Atlanta Hawks that, you know, we usually think of them as being a playoff contender and a team that you can generally write in, maybe not pen, but definitely a very dark pencil for the 4, 5, 6 spots somewhere there in the Eastern Conference. Are there any teams that, you know, are really going to bottom out here this year that you are looking to fade?
Yeah, and it's interesting because right now I've just been thinking in complete terms of season win totals because that's what I've been prepping this last week and finalizing. And, you know, ultimately, if I'm fading him early in the season, it's going to depend on the numbers. Like you said, it you know, you can't really tell yet. You can make some educated guesses. But one thing I will say that's worth mentioning for people for the next couple days that are going to bet some seasons, there's a change to the lottery system. If you didn't know, it went through, I think, 2 weeks ago. But the lottery is changing in 2019 to it not being so heavily weighted towards the worst team having such a significant advantage at getting first pick. I think it used to be 25%, and starting 2019, like first, second, third, and fourth are all the same. They're all like 14%, and then even like the fifth worst team is like 12%, and the sixth worst team is 9%, and the seventh worst team 7%. Like it, you don't know. I mean, whether you're like the bottom seven, there's not much of a difference. So they're kind of balancing it out to keep teams from tanking to the degree that they've had. You know, like the Sixers or the Nets in recent years. So that being said, this year and next year essentially are the last years for the ultimate tank. And so some of these bottom teams that are, I mean, the Bulls are one who just, they have the worst roster in the NBA. And I don't even, actually, it's not even close. They not only just losing Jimmy Butler, but losing guys like Rondo and Wade, and then just they just don't have much. I think I'm actually going to pull up my player ratings on them, because it'll be a laugh for anyone that's still listening. Their best rated player is Zach LaVine, who's injured because he's still coming off an knee surgery they traded for. Robin Lopez is their next best player. Chris Dunn, a guy who was really, really, really bad last year as a rookie, is technically their third best rated player. They have Bobby Portis, Justin Holiday, Cristiano Felicio, Lauri Markkanen's a rookie, and maybe he'll end up being good. Denzel Valentine, Jerian Grant, Paul Zipser, Quincy Bondexter, David Nwaba was a D-League guy the Lakers picked up last year and couldn't even make the Lakers roster this year. They waived him and the Bulls snagged him. They just have nothing. Their season win total is 22.5 for a reason, and they're one that they're going to be tanking from the get-go. And if it gets close, you know, after All-Star break, these teams know this is their, you know, last year we're getting one or, you know, the last or I should say the worst record in the top pick is going to be significant. But the one other one I wanted to mention on the West side, the Sacramento Kings dealt their first rounder in 2018, I believe, or I should say 2019. So the last year for them, the ultimate tank is this season, which is the 2017-2018 season. So this is it for them, because the Kings don't even have a first rounder the next year. So this is essentially if the Kings need to get a piece, and they traded Cousins, they're trying to kind of rebuild. I thought they had one of the best drafts of any team in the league just this past draft, and I'm excited to see how some of the pieces fit. Like obviously, like Buddy Hield and Willie Cauley-Stein have been there, but they snagged De'Aaron Fox, who I think is going to be really good, and then they got Justin Jackson, who I thought was going to be good, and then they got so Harry Giles is the Duke player that going into his freshman year at college was by far he was the number one on everyone's draft board, and then he's had knee problems. And he's sitting out most of this year, but they snagged him late in the draft. I thought it was a good snag in case he ends up, you know, his healthy knees. And he was like a Joel Embiid type player. So they did really well. But this is like their rebuild mode. I could see them there being a team that just completely tanks, rest guys. So they signed like Zach Randolph, Vince Carter, George Hill, just because they need to. And they don't have a first-round pick the following year. So if there's going to be tanking at any extreme, like it's already been pretty extreme, but this is the last year of it probably being as crazy as it can be. So watch out for some of these bottom teams, especially post All-Star break. I mean, I would not be backing the Kings or the Bulls, the Nets, even the Hawks now are a much worse roster than they were just a year ago. Maybe the Pacers even are in the conversation, the Suns. It's going to be pretty ugly, I think, for a lot of these teams.
Now, one thing I've kind of speculated about, and I could very well be wrong, I mean, the NBA is not really my jam, so, you know, this could be something that I'm incorrect about, but one of the things that I like to do in other sports heading into a season is I like to look at the season win total. I like to gauge what the market perception is of these teams. I like to see who's expected to have a significant drop-off, who's expected to jump up quite a bit, the Minnesota Timberwolves again this year after failing expectations last year. Now this year, their season win total even higher than it was last year, and they have to make a really big jump to get there. So my thought process then would be that coming into the season, the game-by-game spreads for Minnesota probably going to be a little bit inflated because there's this perception that they're going to be a really good team. Is that dangerous, or am I on the right track doing that, not just with Minnesota, but as a general rule of thumb?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine to have that opinion or at least be looking for that entering a season. Ultimately, you know, again, for me, it comes down to numbers. So if that opinion doesn't match up with my numbers, then I'm not going to be probably betting it. But if, you know, the Timberwolves are expected to be, you know, X good and you only think they're going to be Y good, and then every, you know, spread for the first 2 weeks seems like it's too high and then back in the numbers say that they're too high as well, then yeah, you know, whoever the Timberwolves are playing. I will say this, the seventh best player and most productive player in the entire league last year was Jimmy Butler. He's really good at basketball. I know they've been supposed to be better in the past. They even picked up Jeff Teague to replace Rubio, which isn't, you know, he's not as good as Rubio, but it's not like a complete drop off there. And then Towns a year older, Wiggins a year older. I think they're going to be a better team, and they should make the playoffs now just because they have one of the best players in the NBA on a roster. They never had that before. They had pieces like Towns and Wiggins who might end up being full guys down the road. But now you're just immediately putting an all-star and you know, second-team all-NBA, third-team all-NBA guy on your roster. So this is the year I do think that the Wolves hype's legit. Before, you know, I think I bet Wolves under like two of the last 3 years just because – everyone's been hyping them up. And, you know, I still think Tom Thibodeau is one of the better minds in basketball. And so they're going to be improved defensively. And who was with Thibodeau and Jimmy Butler in Chicago. So I wouldn't get too hyped up on Minnesota to actually talk about them directly, but definitely, you know, their numbers each week or each game throughout the first few weeks of the season and compare them to where you think your expectations would be on each team. It's going to be overvalued. When it comes down to it, I'll pull up the actual my model for their projections. I have it here. Sorry, it's 50 wins, and you know that's pretty high. I remember I was telling you guys Minnesota and Denver are my 7th-8th best rated teams in the whole NBA, which I think people would see surprised or be surprised. But Jimmy Butler is that much of a difference maker. So this is the year finally I think they do make the playoffs, and I'm not going to be looking to fade Minnesota. I think they're going to be here for to stay, I should say, you know, in the NBA now.
All right, one final thing to talk about here when it comes to the NBA, and you know, this is something that's disappointing for me because I'm not somebody that knows the personnel real well in the NBA, but I feel like I've got a pretty good handle on situational handicapping when it comes to the association and to the NHL as well. But the NBA this year, starting about 10 days earlier than they did last year, which means there are more off days worked into the schedule here for these teams. So, Cheetah, how does that affect your handicapping?
You're talking about just the new schedule switch?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, early on, I don't know if it's going to make much of a difference because teams are so rested, but definitely, I think I had mentioned earlier the teams, Spurs, Cavs, you could even throw the Celtics in there, some of the high-powered teams, or like a team like OKC now that, you know, has an older Melo, but some stars like Paul George, Westbrook, they're not going to be resting guys nearly as much. Probably not as randomly as they were in the past. And so I think it benefits them, especially from a season win totals perspective. Are there going to be less spots where random team Nets, Suns, you know, the Magic, the Pistons have a chance at beating a team like that in a bad spot where it's a 4-5 or a back-to-back? But, you know, there's not going to be as many of those is what I'm saying for one. But on top of it, the teams are just going to be more rested, which is the ultimate concern from the teams and players and then the NBA. And if they're more rested, they're just going to perform better. And if you're a better team performing better versus a weaker team that's more rested, I mean, that's just going to compound the guys that are better at it and playing basketball. I mean, so I think it's scary. Like Warriors, Spurs, like I couldn't bet the numbers say to bet Warriors under, for example, like I couldn't do it. I just think there's like every season win total may end up being like too low because now instead of having those weird spots, there's still going to be a couple, but maybe half as many as we had four where, you know, the Warriors would slip up on the road in Miami. I remember a couple of years ago in their 73 win season games, you know, they were at 73 wins or not. And, you know, I think that when it comes to, I guess the flip side is the bottom end teams, not only with this goal where it's the last year to tank for some of these teams, they're not going to be they're going to be more rested, but so are the other teams who are better than them. So it's going to be hard for me to bet Bulls over season wins. Bulls, Hawks, Nets, Kings, Pacers, I'm not betting overs on any of those teams. Nets was close, but I'm probably not going to end up firing on them. And it's just a tough situation to I guess gauge kind of how the new scheduling is ultimately going to affect. So I would just tell people to be a little more cautious. Don't just be taking the double-digit ugly home dogs as much versus the powerhouses, because if they're not resting guys, then I think there's going to be a kind of a slight lack of adjustment maybe early on in the year, or especially, I should say, though, later in the year when the schedules have intensified and obviously guys have already played 40, 50, 60 games.
Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com, also the owner of PodcastU.Vegas. Whatever you want to plug, man, feel free.
Yeah, if you're interested in picks, you can head over to WagerTalk.com and get all of those weekly, monthly, season-long, whatever. If you're interested in just kind of more content like we talk about here on the show that is a cheaper version of picks that don't include my actual personal plays, but everything else just about, you can go to podcastu.vegas and get those. But yeah, I'm excited for the NBA to start. Happy to talk NBA whenever you want.
Yeah, apparently. I know that we ran quite a bit long here with the NBA, but I know it is your favorite sport, and obviously you've dug in quite a bit here this season. So Good luck with the association, Cheetah, and we'll talk to you again on Friday for the Super Contest segment.
That sounds good. Appreciate it, Adam. Take care.
Great stuff there on today's show from Sports Cheetah of WagerTalk.com. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll hear from Brian Leonard, also from WagerTalk.com, and then Wes Reynolds for our Wednesday Wagering with Wes Reynolds segment. Thursday, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. No Rolf Michaels this week. We'll find a pinch hitter for him. Friday, that Super Contest segment with Cheetah, and then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the Odds Report. So do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.